Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live from the Apple Studios. I'm Don Allen, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good evening, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Good meeting. Good evening, if you will. I'm getting ready to say, let's get to the meeting. Boy, I'd like to be in the city attorney's office and just down the street here in downtown Minneapolis. Did they get blindsided, Don. But first of all, the best, and this cold weather here in the Twin Cities, if you will, temperature under zero, below zero, wind chill about 22 below wind chill, though it's supposed to warm up tomorrow, whatever that's supposed to mean. But, Don, let us go for our national, international audiences. Story breaking on a couple of the major medias. Apparently KSTP appears to have maybe gotten to it first, but right now I know KMSP is working on the whole thing about the liquor scandal and the possible shutdown of 2 5-star hotels here in downtown Minneapolis. But KSTP and others are now reporting, Mr. Allen, that a special session, I got to tell you, you've got to know the law. You've got to know how to go in and force the attention of the courts. Notice we said force. There will be an emergency hearing tomorrow in the Hennepin County District Court here in the Minneapolis on a motion that has been filed to block a number of actions pertaining to the Viking Stadium. And are you aware, Don, if there's anyone briefed you on who the plaintiffs are?
It was two former city council members. The vice chair of the city's audit committee filed the lawsuit.
Who has been on this program and who shared with us way back in April. I was surprised that, yes, Ostro, I was very surprised by him. And Dan Coyne. I knew that Dan would be involved, and I know that Woodard would be involved.
Woodard, because she
kind of indicated as much to us when she was with us way back in the spring that she was very uncomfortable as a member of the special commission, audit commission. She was very unhappy with outgoing Mayor R.T. Ryback, who's in enough trouble behind this liquor scandal that is rocking the city right now. I have to tell you, and maybe we'll get a call from Doug Mann, former mayoral candidate, current NAACP member. Maybe he can enlighten our listening audience to what the heck has happened. This was a heck of a move by the three plaintiffs to, as I said earlier, force the attention of the district court to hold an emergency hearing. Boy, they went deep into Anglo-Saxon law in doing that. The court, very well, though I maintain that the state Supreme Court, because of the vested and monetary interest that is involved here, would probably overturn any decision by lone-sitting district court judge to stop this project. But, boy, the park board is over the barrel. The city's attorney is over the barrel. Ryan Construction is over the barrel. Wells Fargo, Don, over the barrel here.
Yes,
well as, of course, the Sports Facility Authority. So maybe as we're looking at the information coming in on the teletax machine and everything else, we'll get a better feel. But this is a major breaking story here in the Twin Cities. Any reflections, any thoughts, Don?
Well, I know they've had a series of bad things going on around the stadium, just including that New Jersey Appeals Court refused to hear arguments by Minnesota Vikings owner Ziggy Wolf on his family's net worth. He wanted to be kept private, but the New Jersey court decided not to hear it. So I don't know what that means, I do know what that means, and that's going to get pretty interesting here in the next couple of days. And also, I am looking for something. We are getting texts like crazy, Mr. Edwards, and I am telling them they need to call in and stop texting me.
Absolutely, Mr. Allen, absolutely. The new policy is in play from the Black Liberation Radio, which we are part of that consortium. Yes, you know, we want to act like we're some liberated people. The thing with Ziggy, I don't think they were surprised that the New Jersey Supreme Court was going to do a very clever thing and not even hear the appeal on that particular matter. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with the appeal as it pertains to the decision by the Superior Court judge there in New Jersey. That's an altogether different matter. I guess they want to know what Ziggy Wolf's worth is. At some point, he'll probably tell them. It's not going to make any difference because she is limited. The judge is limited by what she can award as pertains to damages. I mean, clearly and concisely. So, they've got the money to cover it. So that's one thing. But I tell you what, that they will not tolerate. I'm talking about the Wolf family. They will not tolerate any delays, particularly in the, you know, as we've been reporting for over a year. They put their money up. See, no one here, when they run that kind of story, talks about the fact that their money is in place. Now, part of what's going on here with this lawsuit by these three plaintiffs is that they're moving to create some problems with the $150 million that the city was obligated under the legislation here in Minnesota to put up as its portion. Nobody talks about the state and the city's portion, which comes to $497 million on what is now a $1 billion stadium. And so, you know, these are going to be interesting things, Don, that the new council will have to deal with as they come to, you know, be sworn in on the 6th of January and to begin the business of the people, okay? Mm-hmm. There are many facets of business for the people. I just hope that this new council with seven new, you know, young virgin lambs are able to get in here and get their feet on the ground running because it is getting ugly. And I'm told that a lot of FBI agents around City Hall this afternoon. It appears that the federal court under the auspices of the chief judge of the federal court, Honorable Michael Davis, have set some immediate inquiries as it pertains to actions to suppress the holdings of two convicted felons, Denny Hecker and Petters, who are serving like life terms for Ponzi schemes and et cetera. I was just taken back by the report by Tom Lydon and KMSP last night and all the documentation they had of the cover-up that took place and the retaliation, including the removal of a police officer working in the liquor inspection office who was removed from his position because he wouldn't fix the documents. And we have two major hotels which may not be able to do any kind of business as it pertains over the holidays of serving liquor.
And one of those hotels, the Grays Hotels, I understand that Mayor-elect Betsy Hodges Cunningham had her kind of unity party there the other night.
Last night. She had the party there, as I understand it. Did you say Monday? I thought it was last night. I cannot understand how a sitting city council member, soon to be mayor, would hold a party at a hotel which is in the center of great controversy as it pertains to a cover-up. And the fact that existing within the ownership of that hotel are millions of dollars of monies that were ordered seized by the federal court as a part of its determination and findings in the case of two separate individuals in two separate Ponzi schemes in which citizens here and across the country were taken for millions of dollars. I just don't understand how, as a part of a moral compass, you know what I'm saying, maintaining a moral compass, that a mayor-elect would even go to that hotel. I mean, you can go to the Marriott or the Radisson, traditional particularly the Radisson, founded here in Minnesota by the Carlson family, if you will. I don't understand the decision to go to a place that is under such a legal cloud. I just don't. Don, let's get that telephone number out. We've been a little missed at the phone number. Phone lines are open, you know.
Yeah, phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. The phone lines are open. But, Mr. Edwards, don't you find this highly suspect that we did not hear anything about Councilman Don Samuels' investigation or these hotels until after the election?
I think that if we really had a ethics board here, like they tried to have maybe 15 years ago, as it pertains to the media, the newspapers, television, and et cetera, that committee would impanel itself immediately to take a look at the suppression of news, if you will. I'm like you, Mr. Allen. I mean, it is quite clear that all of this was covered up. Outgoing Councilman Don Samuels received notification in January of this year, 2013, from the Department of Justice, from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Federal District of Minnesota, that he had, quote-unquote, I guess you could say, semi-exonerated, and that the matter was closed, and yet nothing was ever said. He hadn't actually announced his candidacy for mayor, so that fluff in the paper this morning about he didn't want to injure his campaign with a lot of rumors and unnecessary inquiry, that just doesn't make sense. But then you have the whole circumstance of why he would wait a whole year and try to quietly, working with some of his lame duck colleagues, have his $10,000 in attorney's fees reimbursed to him. I mean, the matter was closed in January of 2013. It would seem to me that a person of significant principle and honesty, if you will, feeling that they needed to recover that $10,000 paid to a former U.S. attorney, Tom Heffelfinger, to, you know, get him off, take care of him, but that you would have gone and gotten, you know, Mr. Heffelfinger's $10,000 last April or March, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like there was some kind of austerity program and the city didn't have the $10,000. They certainly had it this morning when, and I think the Minneapolis Star Tribune is reporting now, I guess the city council and the councilman's friends, Mr. Samuels' friends, voted to give him his $10,000, I guess. I don't know.
a lot of people don't like that's happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people on the social media chat that are upset about that.
Yeah, well, it's up to them to speak out. But, you know, it really is too late because he ran for mayor. The issue never came out in the public venue. And now he's moving on. You know, it was interesting. The article talked about him being a toy designer, that he, you know, used to design toys before he became a politician.
Mm-hmm.
But that he didn't have any plans. Now, I'm understanding something a little different than that. I understand that there were some plans, but that a prospective employer asked a question about the FBI investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that had to be discussed. Conflict of interest in involving a former organization that the good councilman and his lovely wife were founders of, the Peace Foundation. You remember the Peace Foundation, don't you? From 2009, 2010, before it was kind of, what would you say, like wrapped into the achievement zone?
Yeah, before it was like kind of switched over to the North Side Achievement Zone over there.
Yeah, yeah. But I just don't understand how the story was suppressed for so long, and then all of a sudden, on really what was the last meeting of the, I think it was Ways and Means Committee this morning, they attempted to give the councilman his $10,000 or pay him his $10,000, reimburse him his $10,000 legal fees, because there had never been a discussion about that he had even acquired a legal fee brought about the need for the legal fee to be paid. Because I'm not sure that the Peace Foundation, who still had monies, or the Northside Achievement Zone should have been the entity that probably should have paid. But I guess the rationale is he was and still is until the first, second, third, fourth of January. He is a sitting city councilman and an elected official, right?
Right. Right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you still own it? Okay. By the way, I wonder how he voted on this liquor thing. You know, you've got to remember, I mean, I have to ask this question over the air. You know, he's the chairman of the powerful Public Safety Committee, which, you know, handles law enforcement matters. Do you think that this particular matter came to him like in, you know, some just general kind of discussions over a drink with he and the mayor and the new incoming mayor?
Yeah.
I think maybe they just kind of talked about what they were going to do to the police officer, the liquor inspector who was relieved of duty because he wouldn't compromise the law. You don't think they had any kind of discussion about that, do you, Doc?
Yeah, well, I think they probably had to have a discussion about that. By the way, Ms. Edwards, we have a caller.
Oh, let's get the caller.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
We had a queue.
Oh, you want the queue?
Oh, caller's just in the queue. Another caller in the queue. Everybody's in the queue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. See you later, Terry.
But I have to raise that as a serious legal question, particularly in light of the outrage now existing within the federal court here in Minnesota, because those assets that were found to be a part of the ownership group of the hotels, that money had been declared to have been seizable, if you will. All that money should have been seized, both from Denny Hecker, who's in the penitentiary, and Tom Petters, who's in the penitentiary. In fact, Tom Petters just ran out of appeals a couple weeks ago.
Yes, he did. Yep.
Yeah, and I think they're still transporting Denny Hecker from prison to prison because of his belligerence and the fact that he angered the Federal Bureau of Prisons. They just move him around like he's a nomad. You know what I mean? I mean, boy, when the federal government gets on your case, they are on your case. But, you know, I want to go back to the local situation. I mean, you know, I'm chairman. Let's say I'm chairman of the powerful Public Safety Committee, which the police department reports to. You think that I would know anything about this, particularly in that we vote on liquor license? Because, see, we're going to take, you know, one thing we do in this town, like we take what few liquor licenses there are for establishments that allow African-Americans to fraternize. I mean, you know, we pull those licenses quick. In fact, we're getting ready, I mean, you know, to pull that colored club downtown there called, what is it, Envy or whatever it is.
Yeah, Envy, yeah.
Yeah, you know, got to pull that license. But, I just hope that we don't see ourselves faced with a controversy before the old and new council members get elected, because let me see, the six council members who retain their seats, should we just assume that none of them knew about this?
You know, I think what has to take place at this point, Mr. Edwards, is a in-depth forensic audit, electronic forensic audit, on conversations, cell phone conversations, emails, any electronic correspondence. I mean, I would hope that they've learned their lessons from the one city council member. Why can't I remember her name? But that just got in trouble behind that.
You're talking about Lisa Goodman?
Goodman, yes.
Lisa Goodman, who was slated to become chairwoman of the Powerful Ways and Means Committee, now chairperson of the Community Development Committee. Is that who you're talking about?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And, you know, she had her files kind of flipped, you know, and I hope these guys were careful enough. But, Mr. Edwards, when that kind of stuff happens, it's an action that takes two people, okay, to start off with. It takes a dyad, they call it. And so,
a dyad, okay.
Yeah, have that conversation, because one person, you can't get caught. That'd be like me going down and saying I have a company with a bunch of employees, and one of the employees did one of my friends wrong, okay, and I was really pissed off. Me as the owner of a company, am I going to just walk down and fire the guy on the spot? No. There are things that are transfer him or do something to him. There are procedures in place, especially with the city and the state, you know, the feds, those type of people, where you have to have a second person involved. And that first and second person has to have another group of people involved. So this and those people have to be totally loyal and sold to the establishment that's working this twisted arrangement. Of course they had conversations about, you know, let's get this guy out of here because if he leaks, you know, we're done. You know, it's going to just blow up in front of
him. Let me ask you this question, Mr. Avalono. Is that the reason that yesterday and today all the special investigative unit personnel were required to sign confidentiality, non-disclosure documents this yesterday and this morning?
I'm absolutely
yeah,
positive.
Really. I mean, you know, I mean, that's what journalism is about, because that they were all the investigative units were personnel were required to do that because there's too much leaking. See, the reason is that it was quite clear last night that Tom Lydon of the Fox Channel 9 KMSP here in Minneapolis had all of the records in a set, but he also had the personal notes of the police officer investigator in question. Now, when you're able to get your hands on a guy's, you know, personal notes, boy, you know, you basically, like you said, with respect to the DAD or whatever, is that
right, yeah.
that person just voluntarily gave them to the media, or in this case, to Mr. Lydon. And I'm just understanding that the FBI right now, as we speak, wants to see all of those notes. They're, you know, moving to subpoena cell phone records and et cetera. In fact, they're going to make sure they cut off Mike Freeman, the Hennepin County attorney, who is trying to be talked to. Because, see, there's so much Democratic Party, DFL, you know, involvement
yeah.
here.
Yeah, DFL.
And so they want to try to get the Democratic County attorney for our county here kind of involved. But I understand that, you know, the federal authorities, and particularly the federal court, have absolute jurisdiction over this. And I know there have been, you know, a lot of telephone calls and, you know, even kind of private meetings. You know, even on a cold day like this, you see, you know, cars pulling up next to each other, you know, parked in opposite directions, and people talking, you know, trying not to have their information intercepted. And, you know, this comes at an interesting time, because someone just yesterday, the Civil Liberties Union here, filed a lawsuit against the Sheriff's Department and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, because they have bought some very sophisticated equipment in the last couple of months that can intercept anything and go into your cell phone and your iPads and et cetera and kind of expunge, you know what I mean, any data you got in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what's happening. You know, it's on that topic, Mr. Edwards, this Internet, big data and data aggregators, I mean, there are computers that now are giving you the option to privately browse and to empty cookies immediately after you leave a particular web page. So what that means is, if I visit Facebook, Facebook is gonna up and down me. They're gonna say, okay, this guy is this person. He's this old. He's married. He has kids. We're sending him ads and things, and we're to watch him because he buys stuff online. And. And so all that information is collected by Facebook, and they I'm telling you, they know me inside and out, because I'm always on Facebook. But the thing is, when I leave that Facebook page, my browser that I use automatically dumps all that connection. And what happens?
Edward Snowden, our hero from the NSA, really helped everybody understand that. Yeah. Do you think that the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which is like the state FBI, and our beloved Sheriff's Department, you don't think they intercepted some of the conversations between council members and et cetera, do you?
I would hope that they did in this case. This is great, Mr. Edwards, because the right in this town has been looking for something for years that would break down this DFL plantation here. And if they go into it deeply and they come out with what, you know, we're talking about might have happened, or a scenario close to it, where there is some contempt, some obstruction, some bad procedures against the statutes or the city ordinance, I should say.
Well, the key word, Don, is obstruction of justice. Yeah. They tell me that's what the little FBI agents were asking as they ran about. In fact, I'm told that they special a task force from the Federal Bureau of Investigation may be on its way in here, may be on the plane tomorrow morning. Mm. And the reason is, I want to reemphasize that, is the anger being felt by the chief judge of the federal court. So you don't get them lifetime appointed judges ticked off, okay? Because there's none of that, we're going to get you at the next endorsement convention, and et cetera. These are lifetime appointees. And Michael Davis, by the way, who is an African-American, first ever to be appointed or selected as the chief judge of the federal court here, Mr. Davis has a reputation of a man not to play with, okay? And, I don't know how the media and them are going to play this over the next 72 hours or thereabouts, but that coming on, you know, the heels of the Samuel situation and then these other things, and now this lawsuit back on point. I mean, this legal action, these briefs that have been filed to stop some features of the People's Stadium, you know, I don't know. Give that phone number again, though, in case we got any callers out there that may want to examine us or question us, because the next thing we'll be moving into is that NAACP stuff. That's a story within itself.
Yes, it is. 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, our good friend here, Blog Talk Radio On Point, Ron and Don Show, Stephanie Woodruff, sends a message saying, be sure to watch KFTP at 10 p.m. tonight for the report.
We're finishing, because I understand you've contracted, we're going for 2 hours tonight here on the Ronnie Donnie program?
Yes, we are.
Okay,
sir.
I would then also suggest people to even take a break and check Channel 9 and Tom Lydon on that matter also. But we're being texted by the chairperson of the Audit Committee for the City of Minneapolis, who has been a guest on our program, that people should tune in to Channel 5 at 10. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what she's saying. That's what she's saying. Tune in to Channel 5 at KFTP, Channel 5, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, at 10 p.m. for, a foot-in-the-ass report.
Wow.
So
you got lag going with the liquor stuff and the hotels that may have to shut down, and we now have KSTP going with the emergency hearing tomorrow morning in the district court here in Minneapolis. Wow. Is there any more, you know, heartaches, headaches that can be advanced on our new incoming council?
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. Wow.
Go ahead,
Don, just tell me what's happening. I know that you had announced your candidacy for a position with the NAACP. That's the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, which has been kind of non-active here. Have you been disqualified, or what's your status, Mr. Allen?
Well, I called several places, Mr. Edwards, including NAACP headquarters, where they referred me back to a gentleman here who I have not been able to talk to yet. But
do you have his name? We need to have his name. I mean, lay his name out.
Middleton. Let me see here. I got to have it in my phone because I was going to give him a little jingle tonight.
Well, Mr. Middleton is in Des Moines, Iowa. He's the regional director.
Middlebrook. He is
Middlebrook. Yeah, Middlebrook.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me just go to that actual page. Friends of the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP. That's what we want. Leave this page.
Uh-huh.
And I am actually looking for his name is Cameron Middlebrooks. NAACP.
But Don, my question was now.
Okay.
Have you been disqualified? Are you still eligible to run along with the Reverend Jerry Maxey and others?
Ms. Edwards, I'm running either way, okay, because what they're doing, if you look at it from the over, and I know you know the bylaws and the election guide like the back of your hand, and just like this guy, Kendall Jensen from Point Peak News, who wrote the story that I was running for second vice president, he also opened up a can of worms by saying that this election, and to answer your question, should not even happen based on the procedures by the bylaws, which means that they are not going by the NAACP bylaws that are the NAACP election guide whatsoever. Because if that was the case, I would know who the 24 executive advisory committee people are, and I could get 3 to 5 signatures that would then bless me or grace me into running this position. But the thing is, it doesn't have – the Minneapolis branch of NAACP does not have an advisory committee. The candidate consent form I just talked about is supposed to have 5 committee member signatures for a candidate running for office at a local branch. Now, we don't have that here. The Minneapolis branch of the NAACP has not been functional – since Mr. Booker Hodges stepped down. When I say functional, even before Mr. Hodges, that we talked about this last week, Mr. Edwards, that door in Sabathia with the NAACP logo on it was never open, ever. And so with that said, the information from that I received from the headquarter office did not say yes, but did not say no.
I see. Oh, okay. All right. So you don't know if you and Reverend McAfee and others are eligible?
Yeah. We have another caller. Hold on, Mr.
All right, let's get the call. Okay.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, caller.
Oh, hey, yeah, this is Doug Mann.
Hey, Doug, how are you?
Mr. Mann, how are you doing? What can we do for you?
I mean,
I've been, you know, it's been interesting. It seems that the NAACP is not following its own bylaws in running this election, which is, you know, really pretty ridiculous. And, you know, as far as it's not real clear what rules they're running. If they've got a special set of rules, well, they must have them published somewhere, right, or something like that.
Oh, we haven't seen them. We don't know what rules they're running off of.
Let me say this to Mr. Mann. The only documentation at this hour now, there will probably be some documents. Mr. Ford, the National Director of Branches, will probably put something together and have it sent out here for his boys and girls. But the only thing is a letter that was sent on the 12th and /13th of November to some members. This same letter is still being received by people, so this is like a, you know, 30-day letter. But the letter merely said that there will be a meeting from 5 to 7 at New Salem Missionary Baptist Church, and that from 5 to 6 you will be allowed to come in and update and upgrade your membership, which is, as you know, Mr. Mann, is not appropriate. And then from 6 to 7 you can vote. Now, what's happened since then is the 180-day rule has been put back in. It initially did not apply back in, and people such as Mr. Allen and others are being told they don't meet the 180-day rule, so they can't run for office, but they can pay their money and still come in and vote for somebody, you know, who may be eligible. Now, Mr. Allen?
Mr. Middlebrooks, Mr. Edwards, so should we give him a
Mr.
call?
Mr. Middlebrooks supposedly was going to supervise the election, and then some said that Mr. Jordan, William C. Jordan, who we had on the phone last Wednesday, Rochester, Minnesota, was going to supervise. No one really knows. I know that I personally was, message was sent to me by like a fifth party that under no circumstances would I be eligible, that I would have to appear and become only like the second person in 60 years to have to appear before the national board to quote-unquote determine if in fact I would be allowed to even own a membership. But I'm concerned about people such as Mr. Allen and others who are, you know, fresh and new and bring ideas and et cetera. And I'm just not sure that Mr. Allen is going to be eligible to run. You know, I think there's a slate. I think you're going to see some people there Friday night that haven't been to an NAACP meeting in 30 years. I mean, really. I mean, we saw this when they unseated Leo the Seals almost 20 years ago. And that's what I see. But to your specific question, what is in writing right now is only the letter of November 12th. But I'm quite sure, Mr. Mann, Mr. Allen, we're going to see something a little bit more definitive by 5 o'clock Friday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah. So, now, Mr. Mann, are you still a card-carrying member in good standing of the NAACP?
No, unfortunately, I didn't finish my payment, my life membership payments. So I have to, if I reinstate my membership, I'll have to do it to, you know, pay the $30 and all that sort of thing.
Well, let me just ask a question about that membership thing, because I remember the controversy about what happened to a lot of the dues. You started paying, we don't need to have you indicate how much you'd pay, but you started paying on your membership, your life membership?
Oh, I paid either $200 or $300
amount of money, right? How much?
I think I might have made, paid about $300 on that.
Well, my understanding is that a life membership is just what it is, that it is yours to pay on for the rest of your life, really. And if you don't get it paid off until 10 years from now and you're still alive, it's still good. Once you start payment on a life membership, they can't cut you off unless they're going to refund your money. And they never refund money for a life membership or a regular membership. So I would maintain that an appropriate ruling by the national board, not Reverend Ford or somebody like that in Baltimore, that you are still a member in good standing, still paying on this life membership, and then
I just forgot to make those last payments, you know. But
Well,
actually, technically, you know, I could possibly run for office then.
Yes, you could.
Well, see, that would be a heck of a technical question that Mr. Brooks or whatever his name is would have to. He would have to be able to answer that in writing. Because that's a serious question which has been debated within the National Board for many, many years, your status as a member still paying on a life membership. You know, I've known people that it took them 10, 15 years to finally pay off their life membership.
Mr. Edwards, I have a suggestion. Should we call Cameron and ask him?
Sure. You've got Cameron's number there. We were able to obtain it. Let's give Cameron a call while we have Mr. Mann with us. Let's see if we can get the regional director to answer and maybe he could help Mr. Mann out.
Yeah. Hello?
Cameron Middlebrook.
Yes, this is he.
Hi, this is Don Allen calling live from the award-winning Blog Talk Radio show, The Ron and Don Show. How are you today? You're live on the air.
Okay, who's calling?
This is Don Allen with co-host Mr. Ronald A. Edwards from the Blog Talk Radio program online, The Ron and Don Show, On Point, the number one radio show. Yes, sir?
I'm actually on another call right now. Can we schedule this for another talk?
The question. Are you the gentleman who is the regional director for the NAACP in this Midwest area?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Is there a good time to get back to you?
Sometime tomorrow.
Sometime tomorrow? Okay,
yes.
All right. We have your numbers and addresses and et cetera. Appreciate you taking the time to indicate that you're in the midst of another call. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
He's gone.
Well, regional director's kind of busy.
Mr.
Edwards. Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I thought we had another call, but go ahead. That's Mr. Mann.
Oh, yeah, actually, one thing before I sign off here. I finished a draft of a petition and brief to the Court of Appeals for the appeal of the decision that was made in this referendum lawsuit.
In the matter of the decision by District Court Judge Philip Bush, is that correct?
That's correct, and I'm going to be making that publicly accessible in a couple of days.
Okay, all right. That's great. That'll be another item that the District Court here will have to deal with as it pertains to the future of the Viking Stadium and the Viking Plaza. Very good. Anything else, Mr. Mann?
I'm meeting with people about trying to put together a slate to take over the school board.
Okay, all right.
An ambitious project, but
they have three members currently targeted: Gaglin, Ellison, and Dick Malum. And so there probably be some real infighting because they clearly have been targeted to be extricated / removed. All right, keep us informed, Mr. Mann. That'll be interesting. Reform the Minneapolis Board of Education.
Right. Now, Ellison is not up for re-election this time around, but in 2016. But Gagnon and Mammon will be up and, you know.
Yeah, but in the case of Ellison, they say it doesn't make any difference. They're laying a cake 2 years in advance. I mean, I guess that's how serious the reformers are to cleanse. I've heard the Nazi expression of cleansing, you know.
actually, they're trying to get rid of the incumbents, huh?
Yeah. They have quite a plan. A lot of money, a lot of big money, a lot of good conservative money coming in from the right kind of, you know, organizations, Koch brothers, Walmart Foundation, people like that. But okay, Ken, stay in touch with us, Doug. Appreciate it.
Will do. Okay.
All right. Take care. All right. Yes, sir. Well, we've got a lot of action here, and this is kind of what the heart of the NAACP election is about, isn't it, Mr. Allen? I mean, we can't get any calls other than from our good friend Mr. Mann and some other. I thought there was be a whole group of people out there that would want to call and indicate their position, and some of them would, you know, have been possible candidates. I wasn't surprised by the response of the regional director who we had here just minutes ago. I'm pretty sure that he's looking at his caller ID right now. I doubt that your number will get through the next time, but then we are journalists and we have other electronic instruments that will allow us to stealth a caller, et cetera. But I don't think you're going to be able to get through to him there, Don. you may have a better chance of meeting him on Friday.
Yeah, I actually called him from the studio line. But, you know, here goes something really interesting that this Kendall Jensen from Point Peak News wrote about the NAACP. He said the vision statement for the organization says, the vision of the NAACP is to ensure a society in which all individuals have equal rights without discrimination based on race. Excuse me. Then he wrote, the vision statement for the organization says, the vision of the NAACP is to ensure a society in which all individuals have equal rights without discrimination, eliminating race-based discrimination. So it kind of says the same thing twice. Then he says both Constitution and bylaws become problematic when talking about the NAACP and recent challenges to the organization. On July 3, 2013, a lawsuit was filed by Tulsa branch of the NAACP against the National Office over Election. In January, Houston's Four Seasons Hotel, which we reported here, sued the NAACP, claiming the association owes it almost $100,000. Wow. Okay. And so he says that, you know, if these people are supposed to do business with due diligence, they're definitely not doing it. There's a problem in the beloved NAACP, locally and nationally.
Yeah, well, we also, of course, last year spent quite a bit of time interviewing a Reverend Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan, who has been the cornerstone of creating a problem for the NAACP, including picketing their image awards there in Los Angeles earlier this year, in which he announced on this program way back in the early part, probably 10 months ago. Reverend Pinckney has laid some serious allegations after catching the national organization taking money from the Whirlpool Corporation to suppress African-American protest in Benton Harbor in Muskegon, Michigan, about a differential in payments, well, actually a different salary platform, if you will, as it pertains to paying African-Americans less. This is a northern state, too, and a labor state, you know, paying African-Americans less than white workers who worked at Whirlpool there in along the coast of western Michigan. And I tell you, if you've been following Reverend Pinckney, he has really created quite a response. His organization maintains that now over 5,000 people have burnt their NAACP membership cards, and certainly their picketing, again, of the Image Awards in Los Angeles back in the early summer certainly was a sense of significant embarrassment, just because the majority or white media chose not to, quote-unquote, report it doesn't mean that it did not happen and it continues to have an impact. You know, I think that's one of the reasons that Ben Jealous, the president of the NAACP, is leaving office. you know, we really haven't heard much discussion about that other than his announcement that he's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's it.
You know, and normally in a political setting like that, the NAACP, it probably takes almost a year to find a new leader, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
that's been the normal pattern. And, man, I just wonder, you know, 2014 is, I said this on my television program and in one of my columns, 2014 is going to be a very volatile year in this country, politically and otherwise. And we certainly look forward as the African Americans, you know, down on the South 40, you know what I mean, of the plantation. We certainly look forward to strong leadership from the organizations that, you know, that indicate that they are about the business of protecting the rights of the sons and daughters of the Africans. So, yeah, this NAACP piece, I'm not sure, but I have to renew my question. Has there been any determination that the Reverend Jerry McAfee and yourself and others will be allowed to run? Because regional director may just indicate to you and show you a document which indicates that you are prohibited. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how things are going to work out there Friday night.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting, Mr. Edwards, to say the least, because based on, you know, the special election, and when they use the term special election, I mean, they can't really use the term special election, and they can't go, how am I trying to put this? They can't go outside of the realm of the parameters already set up by the NAACP for this particular process, okay? And so with that said, how are they, you know, these local NAACP actually going to, I mean, they're going to have to produce these groups, this election committee, the ballot counter, they're going to have watchers, and it's very detailed.
But see, this is where you and I on the left and right disagree, Mr. Allen, because I've seen this kind of ploy for over 50 years with the NAACP. And, in fact, a decade ago, I went head-to-head with Reverend Ford and et cetera, and that, you know, led to my expulsion for life from the organization. They can do anything they want, and their philosophy is that you don't have deep enough pockets, so I'm not sure that the NAACP is in any kind of financial stability to take on a protracted legal battle. But their position always has been, and they do this oftentimes with the smaller branches in smaller towns, be it Terre Haute, Indiana, or Kokomo, or Blytheville, Arkansas, you know, Guthrie, Oklahoma, places like that. They feel that they can out-muscle you. And so I just maintain to you and your associates, Mr. Allen, that are going to be running for office, I just think they're going to do whatever they want to do. And they will come in and they will say whatever they need to say to get the election done, if you will. They will have forged documents and et cetera. They will have even more forged documents after the meeting ends. And if they're able to get through the election, there will be documents that if people decide to challenge this in court that will allegedly say a multiplicity of things about that this was done the right way. You touched on something very crucial, and that is the statement in the letter of November 12/13 that this is a special election. I think that young Booker T. Hodges, the outgoing president of the NAACP, who was undermined at every turn by the gentleman that we just had on the phone from Des Moines, and by Reverend Gail Ford and others, Mr. Hodges was undermined at every turn. At every turn, he was being undermined. And I just think, Mr. Allen, that they're going to do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
And then the media here will begin to give them some profile, okay, talking in terms of the reemergence of the NAACP under dynamic leadership, whoever the person is, be it this Nick Mohammed, if you will, or Brett Buckner, who have all been down and seen around City Hall over the last couple of days. Maybe they're trying to get a liquor license. I'm not sure. But anyway, these individuals will be portrayed as the type of leadership that Minneapolis needs. In fact, I would bet you a hot toddy that If this thing intensifies at some point in, like, January, the Star Tribune will write editorial and talk in terms of we need to move on and the time for change.
Yeah.
that would be the headline. And I just think that that's in place. I think enough money has been spread around. If you will, you heard what Mr. Mann, who has been a candidate on a number of occasions for the school board, there are reformers on both sides of the aisle. That's one of the things you have to recognize when you're in the political house, if you will, that, you know, it's all in the eyes of the beholder, you know what I mean? And there are reformers on both sides of the aisle, so, you know, it becomes a question of, you know, which reformer is loved more by the masses who want to be reformed, if you will.
Exactly.
And so, I just think that they're going to tell and do anything they want to you guys there on except, you know, it's really dangerous from the political point of view to go in and disrespect the church, the slash house of an African American or Black Baptist minister. But again, the Reverend Jerry McAfee will have to determine how it is that he wants to see this played out. But I just have to say to you that I can't agree that they can do whatever they want to do. They can falsify whatever document they want to falsify. They can go cite to use some rule that allegedly came down. Bo, you have documents, if I'm not mistaken, that show the change in the rules in February of this year, correct?
Yes. I have the election guide, and I have the bylaws, which the election guide was updated in February 2013, this year. But, Mr. Edwards, it's still clear that they have to use these procedures. And I understand what your point about them coming in and doing whatever they want to, but this is going to hit a challenge. Okay, bottom line.
Well, again, let's debate it back and forth because, you know, obviously we have people who are in the chat room but are not prepared to dialogue. They will very well say to you, and I hate to kind of let it out, but we need to let them know that we know and understand there are some of us who are longtime veterans of this kind of shenanigans. They will produce documents which indicate that there were a series of meetings in St. Paul and in Rochester. Mm-hmm. In preparation for this special election. I mean, they'll do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Jordan, William C. Jordan, the state conference president for the Minnesota-Dakota Conference, will produce documents which indicates that there were meetings in the summer of 2013. There have been meetings in the last 5 to 6 weeks. They will put some names down, some of which you may know, some of which you may not know, most who you will not be able to find, okay? But they will put that down. And the reason for that is that consolidates and firms up their case both before any kind of district court and also the national board, okay? Because what the court will basically do is say, well, you know, this seems to be more of an internal matter. You Negroes settle this issue amongst yourselves. And so what happens, you find, first of all, a special commission will be sent into Minnesota. It will be comprised of three national board members selected from around the country. They'll come in, they'll listen to the testimony, they'll even have tape recording, may even hire a stenographer. Well, they don't have that kind of money anymore. And they will make a ruling and they will make a recommendation. Now, you got to remember that this begins to be a process of drawing out process, okay? Now, you also are going to have a situation where, depending on what the overall agenda that outgoing Mayor R.T. Ryback, if he's able to do it based on this liquor controversy, will do a number of maneuvers. He and his supporters will do a number of maneuvers, and one of the maneuvers could very well be finding the right judge here in Hennepin County is to file a motion to order, like yourself, Mr. Allen, to cease and desist from harassing and threatening the NAACP. I've seen them do that. In fact, they just did that in the situation in Houston that you were talking about. They've done it in Blytheville, Arkansas. They've done it in St. Louis, if you will. They're just a multiplicity of little tricks that they can use. And then what begins to happen, your people begin to fall away. They also will, you know, bring in enough lawyers that you'll find yourself looking at court dates. But the key would be to file a motion in the courts ordering you, particularly yourself, Mr. Allen, even though you're a conservative and et cetera, but identify you as one of the bad guys, if you will, because you still are eligible, and then order ask that an order be issued for you to cease and desist from even coming in contact with NAACP events, meetings, and et cetera. And then the prelude to that is to then you'll receive a letter indicating that you your membership has been suspended. Do you follow?
I follow you. I follow you. They need to send me my money back then, too. So.
Now, I've seen some situations, again, where people have said that and they never did get the money back. You know what I'm saying?
I believe.
I mean, they, you know, it's just unbelievable. But I tell you, you know. By the way, just on a note, you know, maybe get the interest of some of the callers. I see that Christian Founder is out and Matt Castle is going to open up for the Vikes in their game Sunday. Oh, well, the Minnesota Vikings, wow, you know. Well, let's hope they have a stadium to play in when it's all said and done. But anyways, give that phone number again. Maybe some people have forgotten that phone number.
Sure.
Phone lines are open.
The phone number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, I would be messed up if I didn't say this. Tony Carter named president of the Association of Minnesota Counties on December 9th.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Being that, if I'm not mistaken, she is the only African-American currently serving on a county board.
Yeah.
No, I take that back. I think Ms. Van Leer now serves on the Washington County Board of Commissioners, so there's two.
Yeah, and she's the first African-American woman to serve as president in 100 years to that organization.
Well, isn't that, by gosh, isn't that something, Don? Okay.
Yeah.
That's about the same time we elected the first African-American or Negro who was elected to serve in any kind of political office here in Minnesota. He was elected to the Minnesota legislature from a district which is now part of Edina and part of southwest Minneapolis. By the way, as we were talking, Don, flashing across our computers and et cetera, TCF Bank is closing like 36, 37 branches here in the Twin Cities, including downtown. Is there something that maybe we all should know?
You know what, Mr. Edwards, now that you mention that, and I'm over here in the other studio, I came across a story, and let me just find it. I'm just checking. I'm looking through the AP archives real quick here electronically.
Okay.
It's from the Chicago Tribune.
Okay.
Now, they're closing banks in 37 Jewel branches in Chicago. That's the first thing, okay? Now, let me go to this other one, and I'll tell you what's happening here, because this is how I tracked this down before on when I first saw this a minute ago. It's a bank, Minneapolis. Okay, here we go. Okay. I love it when a plan comes together. So here goes the thing, and I found this really weird. I'm glad you jogged my memory on this, Mr. Edwards, because on December 11th at 2:34 p.m., the Chicago Tribune had a breaking business news that TCF Bank is to close 37 Jewel branches, okay? The branches are expected to be closed by March. It will maintain 118 branches inside Jewel stores in the region, I should say. And so that's for Chicago. Now, Minneapolis, TCF Financial Group is going to, along with Chicago, are closing 37 area branches. So this is a decision. They're adding 52 new ATM machines. That's in Chicago. And so they're only going to operate 118 TCF branches in grocery stores, period. So, yeah, the cutdown, it's not saying the reason why the cutdown other than they're expected to retain employees impacted by the consolidation. okay? And
well, that's interesting. You close down a branch. Let me see now. You close down a branch. Let's say you have about 24 employees in that branch, and then you put in a machine which doesn't need anybody to do anything other than to maintenance and maintain maintenance and make sure there's enough cash in there. That takes one person. Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, when you start talking about times, 21 times, you know, 36, 72, 144, I mean, wow, okay. But I just hope that everything is solid with TCF. You know what I'm saying? I mean, announcement made kind of quiet, you know, kind of in the middle of news stories and et cetera, you know. Do you think the Volcker Act has had something to do with some of these decisions, you know, where the regulators are going to get even more tougher with respect that there's not predatory manipulation, financing, and et cetera?
Yeah, well, it's true that they're looking at, they have another, this is like a side blogger in Chicago saying that TCF, and he's a financial blogger, their growth portfolio is getting squeamish. And so they're trying to cut back on, cut the fat, and he said the mainstream media is not giving the information. Why? Because, you know, I don't know. They probably spend a lot of money in the newspapers with advertising and stuff like that, and you know, they don't want to hurt them too bad. But he says that, yeah, their growth portfolios are looking not as stellar as they looked, you know, 2 years ago. So this is a plan in advance to kind of stem off any catastrophic.
Bad word. I'm sorry. Bad choice of words as it pertains to the financial industry. Yeah. Okay. So all right. So the Chicago Tribune, a paper 450 miles away, had already found out about TCF here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, shutting down some of their branches. And I imagine a spokesperson for TCF will indicate that all of the there will be every attempt made to find employment within the corporation for the displaced workers, if not, you know, certainly working on something, right? I mean, isn't that the normal modus operandi?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and this goes with TCF, you know, Mr. Edwards, has been having trouble since January 8th this year when they closed all those Iranian students' accounts, you know.
I'm surprised that you as a conservative would bring that up about those, you know, kind of Iranian Islamic, you know, students at the University of Minnesota that you're talking about who had their accounts closed. I mean, merely we were accommodating, and I'm going to have to take your role on, Don. We were merely accommodating the NSA.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
and the CIA. I mean, determinations were made that these people couldn't be trusted. You know what I'm saying? You know, and we were kind of watching their money transfers and et cetera. Didn't quite like where they were sending some of their money, if you will.
Yeah.
And so, you know, unfortunately, we kind of had to sacrifice TCF. I mean, better TCF than one of the big banks that can't fail, like, you know, Wells Fargo.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, I'm just looking at something here. Again, we're getting all this information from people are texting, and I'm trying to pay attention.
Oh, I bet they are. I bet there's a lot of texting
I'm telling them to pick up the phone and call, but I need to look back at that TCF thing because, you know, there's top 141 complaints and reviews about TCF Bank. TCF Bank to close down 37 grocery store locations, Chicago News. TCF to close dozens of Midwest branches. Kerry Levin, 8 hours ago. Closing Irene, well, we already talked about that. TCF, though, has had a series of kind of interesting problems. I remember back in the 90s when I even had when I was working downtown and I had a direct deposit, and sometimes I would get checks before the direct deposit. I would deposit them and write a check on that check. And they would bounce it, and they would say, well, it's floating. I said, how the hell are you going to float money when the guy who wrote me the check has an account here with millions in it? You're going to float my check? And they had a lot of people left and went to Wells Fargo and for U.S. Bank and other places. But, yeah, they've had They have them serious.
Yeah.
Serious.
Well, we have to remember that, you know, about 15 years ago, a little bit more, we had one of our beloved financial institutions collapse, if you will. In fact, a man by the name of Harold Greenwood kind of hit upon some, you know, bad times as pertains to business practices of that particular savings and loan. And this was back in the days when the saving and loan scandals, the SNLs, as they were said. In fact, our beloved president at that time, George Bush, the first Bush, kind of got caught up in that. You remember he had a son who was a bank president of an SNL out there in Denver. You know what I mean? And it kind of, in fact, I think a senator out of Arizona kind of lost his seat as an outgrowth of his role because he also owned an SNL in Arizona. It was ugly, but, you know, it got cleaned up. I mean, you know, we heard a lot of discussion about there wasn't enough regulation, there weren't enough regulators, if you will, and it would never happen again. Of course, 2008 came along and the whole bottom almost dropped out. But, you know, hey, we just wish the best to TCF, if you will. By the way, the company that I was talking about, Don, a lot of people probably, Midwest Federal. Remember Midwest Federal?
I remember that's in sixth grade when they taught in the Minneapolis public school where they taught, you know, how to save money. They would come out to the school, give everybody a bank, just like First Bank and just like a couple other banks, and have you to save so much. And once you got that bank full of quarters, it would be $10.
Yeah.
So once you had $10, you can go down to the bank with your parents. And back then, they didn't have all that computer stuff and cards, and they give you a little passbook. So whenever you got 50 cents or a dollar, you can come to the bank and deposit it. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
I remember that. Yeah,
in fact, their logo was the tree, the tree to take shelter under financially.
Yeah.
Midwest Federal, yeah. Yeah, these are things that, you know, I know we're not supposed to talk about. I mean, you know what I mean? Just kind of, you know, keep a lid on it, if you will, kind of stealth it, make it go away. Don, throw that number out there. I was expecting we'd have some kind of calls about the NAACP or the liquor controversy and corruption investigation, et cetera. You know, apparently not. People are just, you think we've kind of gotten into the mood of Chicago where we just accept corruption as the order of the day?
I think that's the case, Mr. Edwards. I think people are I'm looking at the AP wire, but let me just tell you, our phone lines are wide open. We have 52 minutes left here, 347-426-3904, 347-426-3904. And if you attended, anybody listening, attended an event tonight involving the Minneapolis Public Schools and parents, please give us a call and give us an update and tell us what's going on. You don't have to say your name. And, Mr. Edwards, I'm kind of talking in code because I want this person
to call in. I can already tell from the studio. I saw one of the assistants come in and hand you a message. I kind of figured that, you know, we understand because there's a lot of pressure as it pertains to the arena of public education here in Minneapolis. And, you know, a lot of powerful leaders are out there, you know what I mean, that are expecting people to toe the line. They've made commitments to big boss, if you will, that, you know, the Negro, quote, unquote, is going to toe the line and keep their mouths closed, if you will. So I can understand a person feeling like they, you know, need to have some anonymity, if you will, confidentiality, et cetera. So we certainly appreciate that. Let me say on that note, as we wait for any kind of call that comes in, we have not addressed the fact, and of course the ceremonies, memorials, and celebrations are still going on, of the beloved Nelson Mandela, who passed over to the other side and has left us. But I heard a lot of discussion over the last couple of days about the dramatic issues of particularly the 70s and particularly the 80s of the divestment and et cetera. You may have been, I think you were in the military when this happened, Don. I still think back to those black leaders here who fought against forcing white corporations to divest, you know, in other words, take their money out of South Africa until some level of humanity and that also Nelson Mandela be freed from imprisonment. And I was just reflecting back on the Control Data Distribution Center controversy in St. Paul. I wonder if there's anyone out there that remembers that controversy. If you do, feel free to give us a call, because that was one where leaders took money, you know what I mean, to maintain that Control Data was not a bad company because it continued to do business in South Africa, looking the other way as black South Africans and other South Africans of color were being killed and butchered, if you will, and would not speak out about the importance of the release at that time of Nelson Mandela. This was in the early 1980s and et cetera. And I was just wondering if folk remember that and they remember who some of the leaders were, though clandestinely, who supported apartheid. Notice what I said, supported apartheid, who were, you know, members of our own beloved communities. You know what I mean? It's another one of those things we don't discuss. Just, you know, it's like we don't discuss. Well, that's one of the reasons we don't discuss it.
Okay.
Because we don't have a historical museum, a black museum, so
things like that
are not even remembered.
No, we have a phone call, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get the phone call.
Caller, you are live on the air. What is your question? Hello? Caller?
Hello?
Yes, you're live on the air. I hear you.
Hello?
Yes? Yes, caller, you're on the air.
Is it me?
It's you.
Oh, hey, I feel so special. Well, I am calling. My name is Billie Jean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and
Billie Jean.
I'm calling because I have a question about the new elections at the New Salem. And I was wondering if you could just tell us exactly who is running for office, because you did mention that the Reverend McAfee is running. I believe you said that. But what position are they running for? And also, if this is taking place at the Reverend's church, is that a conflict of interest?
No, it is not a conflict of interest under the rules and policies and history of the NAACP. There have been many occasions because the NAACP has always considered itself to be entwined with the religious community. And so oftentimes in many enclaves for years, elections and et cetera were held at churches because that was normally the only facility that could accommodate a fairly large crowd. But beyond that, oftentimes the minister of that church would oftentimes be a leading civil rights community activist and et cetera. And so many, many, many years ago, the NAACP debated that question on a couple of occasions because there were questions about 501c3 status and all that, but then there was, you know, the religious consideration. So in the case of Reverend McAfee, there is no way that there was a conflict of interest because initially when they apparently negotiated, they being the leadership of the NAACP, and that would be State Conference President William C. Jordan of Rochester, Minnesota, they had no problem with asking for the utilization of his church, and Reverend McAfee was not a candidate. It was not until after the announcement was made on November 12th that the election would be held at his church that apparently supporters of Reverend McAfee approached him and asked him to consider running as president of the NAACP. In the last, let's say 6 or 7 days, and what happened was just day before yesterday, Reverend McAfee announced on his personal website and on the previous day before his congregation that he was a candidate. And then the rules seemed to change, you know what I mean? But none of the rules that have changed had anything to do with conflict of interest, okay? It had to do with, yeah, go right ahead.
So my second question is, since there's a history of this taking place in churches, did the reverend of those churches in history, did the reverend also run? And how did that work as far as the fairness of other candidates? And I wanted to just say one thing that, you know, I know that we have a lot of things that we fight for out in the community, and what exactly do the NAACP does for the people of color, and why is it so important right now? What's so special about this?
Oh, you need to be talking to the individuals who are members of the NAACP who have been active, if you will, and they can tell you that the doctrine or the mission statement of the NAACP is to fight for the rights of education, freedom from oppression, economic prosperity, and et cetera. And that's why they are a civil rights organization. And so the manifesto that created the NAACP, which was originally called the Niagara Movement, I assume that you should be studying or want to study that, that is kind of the mission statement of the NAACP. By and large, they attempt to do that, if you will, but we've become modernized, if you will, in America and in Black America. And there are many who say now of a more younger generation that we really don't need the NAACP, that we have crossed the Great Valley, that success is at our beckoning call, if you will. Things are great. We really don't need that 1950, 1960 style of approach and advocacy and et cetera. And each individual will have to determine if that's a fact, if that is what has really happened. But to your specific question, the NAACP has been in business for a long time, and they've had their great moments and they've had their downturn.
Do they have a good relationship with the Civil Rights Department?
What Civil Rights Department? Where? You talking about in Washington, D.C.? You talking about the Justice Department?
The Civil
What's the Rights Department you're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department.
NAACP have a relationship with the Civil Rights Department? I don't think so, because the Civil Rights Department doesn't have a relationship with civil rights.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why I ask that is because we know that, you know, Minnesota is number one in high unemployment. And so I wanted to know if the NAACP, that you did, that's their mission for equality and all that, you know.
You know, that is a doggone good question.
Yes, it is.
Billy Joe, you know, there was a study done in 2010.
Billy Jean.
Yeah, it was a study done in 2010. In fact, taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis paid $500,000 for it. Took 8 years to get it done. It was a study dealing with equity, diversity, employment, and et cetera. It was issued on the 14th of October, 2010. And there was basically, except for activists and journalists like myself, there was total silence. And the Minneapolis Urban League, under the then young incoming president by the name of Booker Hodges, attempted to meet with the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department under the leadership of Velma Carlevelle, if you will, and develop a plan to address the high unemployment, if you will, as well as the significant lack of contracts and et cetera coming from the city of Minneapolis under a very liberal mayor, liberal council, and et cetera. And the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department declined to pursue that. And so to your specific question, the Civil Rights Department has done nothing about these issues that you just talked about. They've done nothing about the staggering and embarrassing rate of disparity as it pertains to employment amongst African Americans, Caucasians, and others. In fact, if you are really computer inclined, if you will, you can call up the study, the diversity study issued in October of 2010. There's another one due in about a year. That's basically the way it goes. But that's an excellent question that should be posed to the new incoming mayor, Betsy Hodges. She should be asked that question. She's been on the council. She was on the council in 2010 when the report was issued. In fact, the United States Civil Rights Commission's Advisory Committee held a hearing at St. Thomas College in downtown Minneapolis. Velma Carlevelle actually sat on the advisory committee of the United States Civil Rights Commission and did nothing to deal with testimony that came from citizens about the continued disparity between African Americans and whites specifically because we as African Americans are at the very bottom of the totem pole. And that's one of the reasons that we on this program talk in terms of the whole situation with the stadium. In fact, one of the questions you may want to ask, young lady, in the form of a letter to the incoming mayor and to council members, the seven new council members, what is the plan to guarantee African-American participation on the largest public works project in the history of the state of Minnesota, and that is the Vikings Stadium, which will be built right in downtown Minneapolis? Those are some excellent questions you have raised, and we always believe in solutions here on this program, Donnie Ronnie program, and those are a couple of solutions we would recommend to you that immediate inquiry be made. What are they going to do to deal with this disparity that is suffocating the African-American population? Okay? Anything else?
Yes.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I wanted to say to Don, earlier in the program, he did mention that there was an article written by someone else about the special election. Could you tell us where to go and read that article?
Oh, I reposted it on my site, rblacknews.com. And
okay.
you can read the article on that in its entirety right there. And it just it's compelling, it's timely and relevant also, but it says some things that we need to hear. And there's also links to the bylaws there. There's links to the election rules. The whole booklet, updated February 2013, is available right there for download for free, of course. And it says a lot of things different than what we're being told by, you know, most of the information I've got, I've either called out to Baltimore or I've gotten secondhand. And the second, you know, as you know, Mr. Edwards and caller, secondhand information is worthless in most cases. And so, especially in this case. So you just have to piecemeal through it.
And also, Mr. Allen, I see that you have, you know, decided that you want to run. So how confident are you in this special election, and will this make a difference in our community, you know, because we've lost confidence in the NAACP?
Well, you know, I've been a critic of flagship organizations in the Twin Cities that say they do one thing or the other. A caller, I don't run a nonprofit. I don't make money by the disparities of a race or a people or a caste. And so when you look at the NAACP, when you look at the Urban League, when you look at these places that say our Black Museum that we don't have, say that they do things and they're actually not doing it, I think that's an opportunity, not a crisis, but an opportunity to get involved and try to assist, you know, the best you can, these people who obviously are not, someone's not doing the right thing. I'm not saying everybody. I'm just saying someone is not doing the right thing. That's why we don't have the things we're supposed to have. That's the reason why, you know, you have these people in the public schools having these events, trying to get the parents out, trying to get, you know, our kids educated. I mean, there's what happened, and I always tell people this. I think that I would do a good job as second vice president. I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm not excited at all. It's more of, you know, crap slinging, you know, at this point. But we have to find out and really get involved in a culture here in Minneapolis among the Black community that is full of weightedness and darkness, and to try to bring that weightedness and darkness into some kind of lightness where it's full disclosure. We know what's going on. I ran across, if I could, Mr. Edwards, just for a minute here. I ran across some documents. I don't know if I have them with me, but I'm definitely going to check. Because I was shocked. I have I'm looking right now at the NAACP manual. And caller, Mr. Edwards, I was just shocked because I went to an event where Ben Jealous was in, talking about, you know, you shouldn't have to show your IDs to vote. You know, voter ID is wrong. You should, no. I'm looking at page 12, voting procedure, the NAACP. when the voter comes to the When the voter comes to the certification table, he/she must produce some form of identification. After presenting identification, the voter is asked to sign his or her ballot by signing opposite his or her name on the certification sheet. After signing for his or her ballot, the voter is issued a number ballot and provided and advised to immediately tear off the number and discard the container provided. So, I mean, they're talking about they're against voter ID, but it seems to me that, you know, you have to have ID to vote in the NAACP. Second thing I want to touch on real quick here. They have a form connected to their bylaws. Now, Mr. Edwards, you and I talk about this all the time, how, you know, we have these terrible atrocities happening from the stadium, no black people down there yet working, to the these young men getting beat by police, getting killed by police, and there's not a black organization that has a press conference. Well, the NAACP has a sheet that says request from the national office, request to engage, which means that what they can do is they can say, okay, we want to support, recommend, or make a statement publicly. You fill out this form. Say if you want all the Minneapolis Public School Board directors, including Kim Ellison and Bernadette Johnson, superintendent, to resign, you can say that the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP would like to make a presentation requesting that Bernadette Johnson, superintendent of Minneapolis Public School, and the board all resign based on this information. And you have to be solid on why you're doing this. Of course, we have enough history. We could write books on why this should happen, and you fax it to your state representative, and they fax it to the national, and then they give you a yay or a nay. What I'm trying to say is there's mechanisms in the NAACP that I haven't seen function since I've been old enough to be aware. So we're talking about over 40, 50 years. You know, and so why does this – go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
No, I'm not saying anything. I think that may have been the young lady.
Okay.
Yeah, can I say one more thing?
Yeah, of course.
For those who are running, I'm sure that a lot of them are listening to the show. And so what I wanted to say is that I've been living here for more than 15 years, and I think that now is the time for us to really focus on who we are as a people and stop blaming others for our problems and getting in position to point a finger. You know, we need to start taking responsibility for ourselves. I mean, you not only will you need an ID to vote, but you need one to get a job as well. So we need to start taking some responsibility for our community and stop trying to get, and this is for the voters, stop trying to get approval from those who only want to profit. And I think that the word poverty pimp, you know, comes up. But then I wanted to say as well, what chance will a person have, and this is a question that you guys didn't answer yet as far as, you know, these elections taking place in church. When it took place in a church, was the pastor or the reverend running for office at that time? Because it would seem as if...
In some, to your question, in some cases they were. I mean, you've had thousands and thousands of elections, young lady, that take place in a church as it pertains to the NAACP. So there have been thousands and thousands of elections. And within that, probably 35 to 50%, maybe even greater, of these churches, the minister, pastor of that church has run, and in some cases has won. In other cases, they have not won. Okay?
Okay, now my generation, we understand that the NAACP is not ran by African Americans. It's ran by white folks. So I'm
not
wrong?
No, well, let me – well – the Urban League is the organization that is more prone to be run by white folks. The NAACP has had a stronger history of trying to maintain blackness within the leadership of the organization. In other words, they've had a black chairperson of the board for over 70 years. The Urban League just got a black president about 12 years ago, okay? And so to that particular statement that you made, in some regards, the NAACP has been much more a black organization, if you will. And that's interesting because...
I don't really mean any disrespect, but then I know that, you know, we have a lot of young men in prison, and the name of the... And it's odd that when our young men have complaints about home raids. Actually, the president's name was on those search warrants. So I just want to make sure
what president's name was on what search warrants?
One of them was the cop, the one that was working for the sheriff's department. He's on a lot of search warrants when it comes to raids, and a lot of our men are incarcerated.
Where are you talking about? You're talking about here in Minnesota, Minneapolis? I mean, be more specific in detail.
I'm speaking of the Minneapolis. We have some brothers who are incarcerated, and we don't want to keep locking our brothers up, you know.
You just made a statement, and you were talking about the importance of responsibility and et cetera. Excuse me, we let you talk.
Yes.
You indicated that a black person's name was on the warrant. What black person's name was on the warrant?
Well, I'm going to be specific. You know, I'm not going to beat around the bush if you don't do that. But Mr. Hodges, we have I know that we have a lot of.
Well, Mr. Hodges is a law enforcement officer. Are you suggesting that he shouldn't be allowed to hold an office in a nonprofit organization?
Well, no. I think that, you know, in this state, we believe in
officers. You thought you were implying that he was an informant or something like that? Is that what you thought you were saying?
No, I'm not implying anything. I believe.
Well, what were you implying?
I'm trying to speak. We can't speak at the same time. And no disrespect to you, Mr. Edwards, or that.
But no disrespect to you, young lady. But you indicated that a person's name was on the warrant, as if that.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Hello.
Hold on a minute. Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air. You are on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to see. We have our attorney general who speaks on the federal drug laws and how it targets blacks. We know that we don't want to lock them up, and there's an alternative to sending black men to prison because we know the prisons are full of them. So I just wanted to say that I have witnessed that name on search warrants and as well as I'm being surveilled in Minneapolis. Now, this is a chair that works in Hennepin and Mocha. Now, this is Hennepin County. So I just wanted to just say that. Maybe you aren't aware of that, but it's a good thing.
Mr. Edwards, you still there? Caller?
I'm going to sign off. I just wanted to say that.
Okay. And Mr. Edwards?
All right.
Okay, thank you very much. It looks like
thank
Mr. Edwards will be calling back shortly here. Let's take another caller. Caller, you're live on
the
air.
Hello?
You're live on the air. Yes, you're live. It's all you,
caller. How are you talking to me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, how are you this evening?
I've had a wonderful day today.
Okay, so I had a couple questions, and I'm sorry I'm just joining late, so you might have talked about this already. I want to talk a little bit about this corruption that's supposedly taking place within this election for the NAACP.
Okay.
I'm trying to tie together the fact that apparently some big money is coming into our city. Our NAACP is weak. I mean, we're pretty much close to dissolvence as far as I can see. The Koch brothers, I'm hearing, are behind some money being pushed in for the reform ed people, and I'm trying to understand why this money would be being funneled through the NAACP for education. I'm not tying that together. I'm not understanding that, and if you could talk on that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, here's what's happening as far as we see it. There's been allegedly, I have to use the word alleged, in their money coming down the pike, money for African-American children that are failing in school, and they're coming. The money is coming from the people that you are.
Go
you
right
are
ahead, Mr.
From.
Allen. I'm back with you. Unfortunately,
okay.
We had some
problems
with the battering, et cetera.
Go ahead. We have a caller, and I'm answering a question, Mr. Edwards, and you might want to jump in a second here because you'll understand what I'm talking about. So,
hi, Mr. Edwards. You have Kathy Jones on the line. How are you?
Oh, great.
Hi, Ms. Jones. How are you?
As a matter of fact, Mr. Edwards, I think that you might do a better job at answering this because I am biased, and since I'm running for office, I don't want to do anything where I'll get a restraining order.
Well, I'll ask my question again if you would like me to.
Go right in, Ms. Jones.
Please,
go right in.
Well, what I'm trying to understand here is I'm hearing all these allegations about big money coming into our city, into our NAACP, because we're kind of at a point where we're, as far as I can see, just as a new member, near dissolvency here. And I'm trying to connect why the Koch brothers would be funneling money through the NAACP when it comes to ed reform. I'm not making the connection, and I wanted to talk to you and explain to me, because I'm not understanding what is the NAACP's role.
It has to do with a couple of organizations that have been formed over the last couple of years. This thing first emerged in Florida. It was crafted in an attack upon the Teachers Federation, and having to do with the issue of education, charter and alternative schools versus public education. A organization was set up in Cincinnati, Ohio, that began to spring out across the country. Ultimately, it showed up here in Minnesota, if you will. And the purpose of the organization is to deal with the issue of education, as well as the training of some, the education of some folks and just the training of others. And so in the course of that, money has come into the Twin Cities to work with the issue of, and what they basically selected was the achievement gap.
Okay.
Now, on that particular question, there was an incident 2 months ago in which the president of the Teachers Federation was attacked by, it's interesting, attacked by leadership of the American, or the African American Leadership Alliance, who maintained that the 10 points that the Minneapolis Teachers Federation had put into play to deal with the problem of the, you know, the gaps and everything from discipline and et cetera, some of which was supposedly to be talked about last night at the Board of Education meeting. In the course of that, issues began to emerge about who was funding whom and who was getting this funding.
Okay.
And Lynn Norgram, who is white and who is the president of the Teachers Federation, has been speaking about this, and herself has made some rather interesting observations about black leadership in some of these organizations who have sided with the Koch brothers, with the Walmart Foundation in Arkansas, and even with the Gates Foundation in Seattle, Washington. And so there is a pattern and practice that has emerged which raises serious questions about the educational future of the African American. In that context, there is a serious question about taking control of the governing boards, in this case the Minneapolis School Board. We had a caller earlier tonight who pointed out that there were targets on the school board, specifically Dick Mammon, Gaglin, and Ellison, Kim Ellison.
Okay.
And the reason is that they are considered to be, quote-unquote, not in step with the agenda of the reformists. Now, that's an interesting word, because we had not heard anything about reform here until about the last year and a half to 2 years, okay? There have been a lot of meetings. There were a couple of meetings in Rochester in which, in fact, the state conference, Mr. Jordan, seemed to be involved in. There's a group identified as the Monitors, which has not been heard from in about 12 years, have emerged as kind of spokespersons for the need to go in a different direction as it pertains to the education and the nurturing of the African American. All right. So this has brought about a lot of discussions about who is supporting whom, where the money's coming from, what is the purpose of this money coming in, if you will.
Okay.
And in the process, there continues to be reports from the State Department of Education, who is charged by law to monitor, you know, success and failure, who continue to talk about, contrary to what is being said here in the city of Minneapolis, there has not been a closing of the achievement gap. And so this has generated controversy. Now, this brings in the NAACP, because no one has had a longer history and a richer history. Maybe all of it hasn't been successful, but they've had a history going back 80 years or more in standing up, fighting, and speaking out as it pertains to issues pertaining to the education of the African American. And somebody came up with the bright idea that one of the things to do was to get control of a primary African-American organization, this would be the NAACP, and position mm-hmm. them in such a way that the reform agenda would be put in place, would be nurtured,
okay.
and then ultimately would be successful in doing what it is they want to do. Now, some
okay.
of these questions need to be posed to the African-American Alliance. Some of these questions, as an example, could be posed to the Reverend Jerry McAfee, who has himself been making some rather interesting statements about his concern about the reformers and about what's really happening with the education of African-American children. So that is kind of in a condensed way. That is
okay,
kind
yeah, that answered
of,
a lot. That makes sense. I don't mean to cut you off. Another question I'm curious. I have a couple more, but, I mean, I'll hang up if you
go right
ahead. But I'm just curious. I mean, because, you know, I'm from here, and I haven't really seen a lot of interest in NAACP over the last lots of years. And I'm
mm-hmm.
just wondering how much money does that play here? I mean, what is it that's driving everybody? I mean, do you have any idea how much money we're talking here?
Oh, we could talk in terms of a minimum of $10 to $15 million. Let me go back to your – because it ties into the question you just asked about how much money is involved. When
okay.
When the NAACP became the recipient under the Bush administration in 2002 of $1 million and Leave No Child Left Behind dollars, okay?
Yes.
The assumption was that the NAACP was going to shepherd and nurture that. What happened
okay.
was is that by 2003, the national NAACP made a heck of a political decision without allowing the Minneapolis branch constitutional consultation, and that was they negotiated with a group of African Americans here to turn the program over to them and allow them to form a private corporation, which they did. And what happened over a period of a year and a half, $1 million disappeared, never to be accounted for. Okay?
Wow.
$1 million. All right?
Go on.
In fact, they were located, their so-called headquarters was in the Plymouth Avenue Bank, which at one time was the home of the Minneapolis Urban League many years
mm-hmm.
before.
Yeah.
This organization had a group of individuals, board of directors, and et cetera, but they never were required to account for the money. Now, there is a report in the office of the State Department of Education in which there was an audit and an examination of what the heck happened to
mm-hmm.
both the money and the plan. And I would encourage anyone to see if the commissioner would in fact make that report available to many of you who have questions about what the heck is at play. Now, in the case of Leave No Child Left Behind and the $1 million that was initially awarded to the Minneapolis NAACP, then transferred as the organization was redesigned and the money went into private hands, the whole
mm-hmm.
question is, what happened with regards to that money and the education and nurturing of the African-American?
Okay.
It was one of the key elements that has continuously led to underperformance by African-American students. Again, Leave No Child Left Behind. Now, there were some newspaper articles. You can maybe find a couple in the Star Tribune. There were a couple in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. But the key is the report that resides in the Minnesota Department of Education, in which an audit and a report very critical of what happened was provided. Now, one of the things that happened, and let me be very candid with you, you know, the person who was president of the NAACP at that time was a minister of a church, okay, big church in North Minneapolis. He was also chaplain to the Minnesota Senate. Okay, African-American, I remember how proud all of us were of him and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But when questions started being posed about what had happened to the $1 million and other little surrogates of his, some of who just got through running elective office here in this last election and et cetera, people started disappearing and et cetera. But the next thing that you knew, the minister left his position at this Northside Church and relocated back to Florida.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, and so no one has ever discussed what happened, how it happened, where is the money, where is the organization that was formed after the regional director from another jurisdiction made the recommendation that the program be turned over to these quote-unquote citizens, okay, you know.
Yeah.
And that in that case alone, it was $1 million. In the case of what is at play now, R.T. Ryback, who will take over a organization that has already proclaimed that it will improve the educational opportunities and success of African Americans, if you will, they say that that organization is already looking at least a minimum of $5 million so that this former mayor can, quote-unquote, help to re-educate and educationally nurture the little Negro children. I find that fascinating. Well, this is a mayor that did nothing for the economic and educational growth of the black community in the 12 years he was mayor. And I have a little theme, and that is, this is a man who wouldn't hire their parents, so he's going to educate them. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, and thanks, Mayor, for the used chairs from the Guthrie Theater. Appreciate it.
Okay. Is that what he gave some people? Yeah.
And then, okay, I guess the other thing, and then I just have one, then I'll get off the phone. So who is running?
That's an excellent question. I would suggest, Mr. Allen, maybe just kind of leave it alone. Mr. Allen has declared he was going to run. Leisha Clemens had indicated, I keep saying to my colleague that the decision by the regional director in Des Moines, who will probably be here on Friday, that Mr. Allen, Ms. Clemens, Reverend McAfee and others are disqualified. I keep telling Mr. Allen that he is not qualified. He has been disqualified because of the 180-day rule.
Oh,
and that rule is that 180 days before an election for officers, and in this case special election, you must be a member in good standing.
Okay.
And no one knows, and in fact no one will probably know until about 5 minutes to 5 on Friday, when I'm quite sure a slate of individuals who are vying for the positions as well as the executive committee will begin to be circulated in the church. That's when you'll find out who is eligible to run, because that document will have been sanitized by the state by the state president, by the regional director, and will be signed off on by the Reverend Gail Ford, who is the director of branches of the National NAACP. That's the way the game's going to be played.
Stand by. We have a couple more callers that might make this interesting.
Is Ms. Jones gone?
No, she's still there.
She still with us, or is she gone?
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Okay. Go ahead, man. We got about 14 minutes left.
Yes, call. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
How y'all doing tonight?
How are
Real
you?
Good.
You know, again, I always appreciate y'all keeping us abreast on what's going on in the African-American community. You know, let me say that, you know, it's a bit disheartening to hear, when you hear the National Investment for NAACP, when you hear these type of things synonymous with us and the wrongdoing with people in power, African-American in powers, and how you cannot, or how we cannot organize and keep ourselves, that becomes a bit redundant. We have to hold our leaders accountable, or so-called leaders accountable. And let me tell you, let me speak personally. Don, I really do encourage you to run. I hope that you are running, even whether they may disqualify you or not. I think that we need a brother, we need an African American in there with integrity, that isn't afraid of the establishment and will speak our opinion. And so I encourage you to run, please, because we need accountability out there, and there's not enough of that. And that word is often thrown around very lightly, and no one really takes it to heart. Accountability is imperative in our community, and there must be some, and we cannot let this go by the wayside without it being called upon and us hoping that there's something done seriously right now. And Don, I really do hope that you win and bring, again, accountability to the situation.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see, because, I mean, I don't know really what's going on, and this is my first adventure into this part of the world, and I'm very disappointed with the whole operation. I'm disappointed with not only the NAACP, I'm disappointed with the Urban League. You know, let's ask ourselves, Mr. Edwards, or Mr. Nelson, myself, when's the last time we had notice of a board meeting from any of these groups?
In the case of the Urban League, about 3 years. In the case of the NAACP, at least a year and a half.
Exactly.
And by the way, the Urban League is not a membership organization.
Oh, it's not?
Never was.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. National Constitution bylaws do not accommodate the existence of a membership organization. That, I have to tell you, that is really the Ron Edwards rule that was put in place 20 years ago when the action was taken to oust yours, remove yours truly, under the guns of armed police at the government center on a Sunday. For anybody that wants to challenge that and et cetera, the story is in the Minneapolis Star Tribune November 1989. Now, excellent observation, sir, about what happens in this process. You know, I hope the best for my colleague, if you will, but I've seen too many of these battles, have been in many, many of these battles, and have been involved in these battles on the floor of the assemblies of both of these organizations, the NAACP, where I was a national delegate, and et cetera, on a number of occasions, particularly the Urban League, as we fought the issue of divestment and apartheid and et cetera. And again, you know, you can say whatever you may want to say about me, but the record is there for in perpetuity. So it's not something I'm making up. It's there. The organization will accommodate you. And now with cyber and et cetera, all you have to do is go and call it up.
No, I do remember that. I remember when you worked on a particular radio station and how you always spoke up and you're so passionate about issues that affect us. And so, you know, there's always going to be those other folks that want to bash what you do and
right.
who you are.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay, brother. Well, you got people like us that know your heart and know your integrity. I'm only 35, and I haven't lived in Minnesota forever, but I do know that you are one of those leaders that we need to continue to look to for information instead of those the ones we have now. I remember the late Gary Suddeth and people like that. Remember the people that I'm sure that you worked with, Ron, to help.
Brought Gary into the Urban League. Brought him into the Urban League. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
To help usher in some of the easiness that us black folks enjoy right now around the communities. And so, listen, man, I'm going to continue to support you, Ron, and I'm going to continue to support you, Don, because, listen, without brothers like y'all, my generation, Generation X, is totally lost. Because we have no leaders to look to that aren't looking in their pockets. You know, you know, I just tell the truth, shame the devil. You know,
yeah.
We don't. You guys aren't looking in your pocket. You're looking to lead, and unfortunately, until we continue to find leaders that aren't looking in their pockets, we are going to continue to be lost, and they're going to continue to want to bash people like you, Ron, because you tell the truth. And you know what, though? Keep on screaming the truth. Don't take all day to recognize sunshine.
Yeah. Oh, I like that one. All right. Anything else, my brother?
I appreciate y'all. Y'all have,
all right.
Have a good
thank
night.
Thank you, sir. Okay.
Thanks
thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, Mr. Allen, we're nearing the last 5 minutes. You know, one of the things we will be in a position to do, and then I will have to, and I was sorry that that the batteries went out on our phone there and our technicians had to rush in. We will be able to discuss with a more factual basis next Wednesday of what happened at the meeting on the 13th of December in the year of our Lord, 2013. So we will be in a position to do that. Let me also say this, because I've known this man for a long time, for much of his life, and et cetera. I was puzzled by the information that all of a sudden directed an attack towards outgoing President Booker T. Hodges, and the fact that the man is a deputy sheriff in Dakota County, because I have to be very candid with you, Mr. Allen. I don't know what the last 3 minutes of the conversation with the young lady was, and I know she was being fed questions. I mean, folks need to know we're not fools, okay? We've been around a long time. But to have implied initially that there were names on the warrant that were informants was really disingenuous and a disservice to the reputation and the integrity of Booker T. Hodges. I would have preferred if she would have been more honest and just said that, you know, Deputy Sheriff Booker T. Hodges' name was on some warrant as it pertains to drug busting, et cetera. You know what I mean? And maybe that's the discussion we may also want to get into, if you know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen, we're talking in codes, because I may want to talk about some of our leaders who have been very much involved in drug activities in this community for a long time.
Oops. Okay.
Okay.
Sitting hot here. I think we have another caller, Mr. Edwards, our last caller.
Oh, let's try to get him. We have 4 minutes left. Go ahead, caller.
Caller, you're live on the air, 6237. You're live on the air. I can hear you breathing in the phone. Goodbye.
Cut him off. We ain't got no time to fool around.
Yeah, we ain't got no time to around.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe they got a lump in the throat when we started talking about, you know, drug deals amongst some of our leaders.
Yeah, that's probably exactly what happened. You know, and on this NAACP stuff, you know, I just like to say, I think we must not belong to the obedient. We must belong to the truth. And a very smart poet had wrote that. And it sets a precedent for what's going on here in this town. You know, we have opportunity, Mr. Edwards, I think, to reset our destiny and to recreate our destiny. Because as long as you're alive, you can create your destiny. You know, every day you
absolutely
do that. And mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's time just to go ahead and do that. You know, don't answer. You don't have to answer to a bunch of folks. Just create our destiny. Let's do it. Let's see what happens, or let's see who obstructs it.
Absolutely, because every human being, man and woman, has a right to walk the path of destiny. I mean, I heard a conversation again with that young lady who, you know, I mean, the questions were being fed to her, but talking in terms of her generation, the mantle has not been denied to them. The mantle is there to reach out and take, and it is the mantle of responsibility, of challenge, of leadership, if you will, of perseverance and preservation. And I keep hearing these young folks talking about, you know, as if someone is denying them. No one has denied them this mantle.
Yeah.
It is there. Take it, okay? Go do something about it, all right?
Exactly.
You know, speak to the issues and the proposition, okay? You know, I mean, I listen closely to folk, but I never really ever hear them tell me how they've ever reached out to help another person, another human being. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, they make declarations and statements, but we've lost that passion to reach out to our fellow human beings. I mean, you know, maybe there are brothers that are quote-unquote in the penitentiary that maybe if their peers, notice what I said, if their peers had reached out to them, that maybe they would be embarking on a different path of life. You know what I'm saying? Because we're oftentimes now told by the young that we are out of touch with what is happening. And so, you know, I will agree to that. I'm definitely out of touch, okay? But when we speak to you about facts, you know, don't tell me I'm out of touch, okay? Because the facts are the facts, all right? They are the things that one can touch and grab, you know what I mean? And
uh-huh.
I found it interesting that there was really no calls that talked in terms of the early part of the program about the whole scandal that
uh-huh.
erupted downtown and et cetera. I mean, I'm just trying to get a feel, because the one thing I've always known as we approach the witching hour, no one, I know Mr. Allen is not, I know I'm not, I know there are others, no one is denying them the mantle, if you will, of the hammer, the white feather, if they know that part of history. No one is denying them the opportunity to take up that mantle and to walk the path of change, man.
Huh.
In fact, I wish that they would, because I could retire.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. That's what I thought. Oh, wait.
Mr. Allen, it's been a pleasure.
Yes, it has. Thank you very much.
Okay.